There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 1206 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday, just a week out from the runoffs for the primary runoffs here in Alabama. We'll talk more about that coming up. Also, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us here in just a little bit. And I'm going to ask the sheriff about something. It's all, I guess, in semantics. It started off, and we shared the video from WKRG, our news partners, the video entitled, I think, it was RV, see if I get it just off the top of my head, something like RV possibly wired with explosives near homes. That was the original, that was the, I think that was the headline on the Facebook Live. It turns out, so there's that, and then it turns out the descriptor is camper with fireworks in it. Wastes a lot of time for local law enforcement. I added the last part in it. But yeah, so we'll get into this, what seemed like it could be a breaking story, obviously one that could be very, very dangerous, turns into something a little bit different. But we'll talk about that coming up after 1 o'clock. Also, we'll talk about the runoff. David Northcutt, running for Alabama State Senate, District 32, will join us here in just about 20 minutes. And I'm so glad to say hello to my buddy, Cameron Smith, R Street Institute, AL.com, and you've been gone too long, so it's good to get you back on the show. Welcome. There you are. There you are. I had to press the right button. There you are.
Well, it's good to be back.
Hey, it's good to have you back. And it's funny, like you just got back just in time for the president last night to roll out the name of Brett Kavanaugh as his pick for the latest Supreme Court justice. Did you time that somehow? Was that pre-planned?
I like to take a nice relaxing vacation when Justice Kennedy announces his retirement, so I can come back just in time for the replacement and all the mudslinging.
Well, and that began, it was interesting, I talked about it this morning, Cameron, I said, you know, that we had last night the usual suspects on the left coming out and decrying, they would have decried whomever. We all saw the tweet that went out that didn't even have the name of the Supreme Court nominee filled in that they were protesting. They would have protested whomever. But also people on the right that are not happy about Brett Kavanaugh being named the president's choice. Why the gnashing of teeth, wringing of hands on this?
I really don't know. I mean, I get it on the left. I mean, they're looking at Justice Kennedy and saying, well, this is, we'll call Justice Kennedy a libertarian left Supreme Court justice in terms of the opinions that he's decided. Obviously, the linchpin vote in the Planned Parenthood v. Casey and some of those really important cases on abortion. For me, it's really a surprise to see conservatives, and I understand it. Some folks were saying, well, we'd like Ted Cruz, we'd like Mike Lee, we'd like somebody who's a known arch-conservative for this pick. I actually think this is a pretty savvy move by Donald Trump in terms of picking somebody who's eminently confirmable. He is a lawyer's lawyer, a very, very smart judge. When I worked on Senate Judiciary, I got to work on his D.C. Circuit confirmation. And I think that this is a justice that, or a potential justice that conservatives can be proud of, particularly if you don't like the regulatory state. Kavanaugh's developed a reputation on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals as the regulatory state skeptic. He's the guy that when the EPA is just kind of doing whatever it wants under the Obama administration, Kavanaugh's the voice on the court saying, wait, wait a minute. You need to look at cost analysis. You can't just do these things and then have no reasonable justification whatsoever in terms of the economics. And so I think it's not a sexy pick, but it's a great pick. be confirmed before midterms, and I think this is a very good selection.
Okay, I want to talk about this because you just hit on one of my notes for you here, because you talked about it last night on Twitter. I've seen some other people discussing it, that Kavanaugh by brand is into the business of limiting the federal regulatory state. What does that mean, encompassing it? Who's against that? I mean, would it be obviously within the departments, but outside the departments, who's against that? Who would be motivated to keep that in check, or lack thereof?
Well, first, realize that there's this whole wing of the Democratic Party that's just anti-whatever. They don't think that this any pick that Trump had made was going to be opposed. I just discount that. I mean, this is sour, bitter, angry, and frankly, politically unattractive. I think Americans are going to look at that and say, wow, you guys cast Republicans in the right wing as angry and bitter for a long time under Obama, but y'all have turned really that way, just nasty, under Trump. And it's not winning a lot of points to the Democratic side. But I think the challenge that we're going to see is he's not conservative enough. Because as a good judge, he's said on things like Roe v. Wade that, hey, I'm going to uphold precedent from the Supreme Court. He's very tactful in his answers. He doesn't put out, hey, here's what I would do in the future. He's going to wait to consider the facts of the case. And some conservatives have interpreted that to say, well, then he very much is pro-abortion. I don't think
that's, so. That's tough to believe.
I don't see that anywhere in this guy's DNA. And I think there's a very, very good chance, based on some of his opinions, that he could be a judge who really looks at challenges and even things like, hey, post-viability abortion, saying, hey, the fetus post-viability has a interest in life that's protected by the Constitution, and you know the court could prescribe laws allowing those type of abortions. I think there's a lot of things that could happen here. That conservatives are going to like. And so I don't want to do anything, and I would urge your listeners or other folks out there in radio land, don't look at this and say, well, we have to stop Kavanaugh to get a Mike Lee or something like that. This is the kind of nominee that we need to get through fast, and can be a very reasonable voice on the court.
Okay, I mean, but that is the key, and this is part of the strategy, idealism versus pragmatism, and this is a debate that I think actually is framing one of the bigger debates out there within the Republican Party, one that I have every day with folks on here, and people say, oh, well, you know, you're just doing the same old thing, and some of the same old thing is because that's how things are done. If you had a Mike Lee, if you had a Cruz, could they be confirmed? I mean, look at right now, you think it'll be easy for Kavanaugh to get confirmed. I've heard the opposite, that it'll be down to the wire, may take a Mike Pence vote to put Kavanaugh. So if Kavanaugh is of question for confirmation, somebody like a Mike Lee, really? They wouldn't get confirmed.
No, I think you're probably right. The difficulty is, are you going to keep your Republicans together? If you do that, you can pretty much confirm anybody. If you see Republicans start to defect, I think what we'll see with Kavanaugh is we'll see some Democrats that are going to vote for Kavanaugh. I think somebody like a Doug Jones.
Well, there, particularly, my next question, yes.
Particularly Jones. If there are no Republican dissenters. If no Republican rejects Kavanaugh, I think Jones is going to have a really hard time walking out on a limb. However, if he sees Republicans start to jump ship, then of course he can vote against and say, hey, look, I sided with those Republicans for this reason. I've seen a lot on Twitter and social media that says, hey, if Doug Jones doesn't vote to confirm, he's done. Well, Doug Jones is going to have a really hard time winning re-election regardless of how he votes on the Supreme Court. If he voted 100% with Republicans, he'd still have a tough time. And I think that's where folks need to, you know, not read too much into this, that one vote, even if it's a Supreme Court confirmation vote, isn't going to make a lot of difference for Doug Jones, because I think for Doug Jones to win in the next go-round, he needs Roy Moore to run again, and I don't see that happening.
Talking with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute at AL.com. Yeah, I'm gonna frame that question when we get back from the break, because that's when I asked it. I was anxious to get Cameron on the phone with us to talk about it, because, okay, if Doug Jones has, and I kind of tend to agree with where Cameron is on this, but if Doug Jones doesn't have a chance coming up in 2020, then does he play up to the Democrat Party elders? Does he do the bidding of Schumer, or does he do something for his home state of Alabama? What's the political play in that? We'll get that discussion a whole lot more. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, rolling on this Tuesday edition of Midday Mobile, 1220. Continue our conversation. Cameron Smith with the R Street Institute and AL.com. And you were busy on Twitter last night extolling, if not extolling the virtues, at least saying it was a good choice for President Trump to choose Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Sean, I think that there's a candidate that makes Democrats look unreasonable for withholding consent, who is very conservative, will push back on the regulatory state. And I want to be very clear what I mean by that, is instead of deferring to agencies and saying, well, how you draft the rules and how you define things is we're going to defer to you. Here's a judge who on the Supreme Court might say, we're going to end what's called Chevron deference.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. If you're going to tackle, because I read Chevron deference a couple times. Explain to us what that means.
So think about it this way. The simplest way to explain it is Congress passes a statute. Let's say an agency has an expansive reading of this. The EPA does this sort of thing all the time where it says, well, here's how we're defining this in this way. And in so doing, sort of expands its regulation outside of the parameters of what's enacted in statute under, say, Clean Air, Clean Water Act. What an end to that deference would be is the court would look at it and say, here's the law that Congress passed. Here's the rule that the agency enacted. This rule doesn't fit. Let's say it doesn't fit within the statutory framework of Congress. They would just say, we're not going to defer to the agency's interpretation. We're going to look at it and give it our own interpretation. And if it's outside the scope of the statute, then we're going to strike it down.
So it puts a litigant on even footing. It doesn't give deference to the government agency.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is people don't understand it. That I had some progressive friends saying, well, oh, so we're just going to leave regulation up to the free market. Well, no. We're going to allow the lawmakers in Congress to make the law and the executive branch folks to carry it out. We're not going to allow the executive branch to use loose definitions and expansive reaches of authority to legislate where Congress hasn't acted.
All right. So let's talk about this. The couple things here on the list. Number one, you said you believe that Kavanaugh is confirmable, right? So let's start off with that.
I do.
Okay, confirmable. Then we talked about Doug Jones, Senator Doug Jones, and his vote. And I want to get your take on that because politically, I've been bouncing this around even before the president made his announcement. I said, I guess it was Monday when Doug Jones said, well, he wouldn't, he would look at things. He's not for sure no. He's not for sure yes. But if you don't think you have a chance, okay, we'll put a couple of scenarios. If you think you have a chance as Doug Jones in 2020, then it probably behooves you to do things like vote to confirm President Trump's nominee. If you don't think you have a chance, why do you care? Why wouldn't you just go with, what Chuck Schumer says? The Democrats say it might serve you better in the long run.
Well, I mean, Doug Jones is a pragmatic liberal. I mean, that's really what he is. And the two plays for him are, one, I'm going to try to be so pragmatic and reasonable and side with Republicans a bunch and vote to confirm somebody like Kavanaugh, and I'm going to try to keep the Senate seat. I think that's going to be a tall order without a Roy Moore on the other side of the ticket, but that's certainly a play that he can make. Conversely, he could be a pragmatist looking at Democratic leadership and saying, hey, guys, look, you need somebody like me on a presidential ticket. You need somebody like me as a standard bearer for the Democratic Party to normalize the Democratic Party that's gone off the rails to the left. I don't know if he'll make that play, but I'm telling you, he has the Joe Biden feel.
That's what I was going to ask. Is he a Southern Joe Biden?
Yeah, I think he is.
Okay.
I mean, I really do. And I'm not a Doug Jones antagonist. I actually like Doug Jones. I don't agree with him on a number of policy positions, but he's got that.
every guy type feel, very reasonable, very affable, and I think he could definitely pull a, and I've said this before, I think he's sort of like a younger Joe Biden. I just don't know if the Democratic Party right now, which has completely lost its mind, is looking to moderate, is looking to build a broad coalition that could, you know, maybe beat Trump. Right now, if they run further and further to the left, I mean, this is going to be like the Tea Party trying to beat Obama, running further and further to the right. It's just not enough of a coalition. And what Trump's done, he's not been particularly conservative on policy. He's not been particularly principled, and he's cobbled together a very good coalition of populists that is rewriting the game, if you will. But don't tell me how Trump's conservative or principled and has a specific agenda. He's actually engaging in good politics, which sometimes makes for bad policy. But I think he's got a very clear track to win again.
And this goes back to everybody says, well, we wanted a business person in there, not a politician, and that's what you would get. I mean, business people that are idealists with their feet cast in cement get left behind by the marketplace. Those that are pragmatic tend to win. That's why, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I'm like that. I'm probably way more on the idealistic side than the pragmatic side, but I can at least see it and appreciate it for what it is, even though I may disagree with parts of it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that I've sort of looked at Trump, you and I have talked about this, the lying, the character issues, things like that, I don't like. I don't think it's a good example for my kids. I don't think it shows real leadership. But what I am seeing is that being assertive, being direct, is something that voters like. With a Jeb Bush or even a Mitt Romney, I think this notion of, hey, I've got a softer touch, I'm ecumenical, bring everybody to the table, sort of the kumbaya feel, really isn't what voters are looking for. And I think that the left is starting to say, oh, well, we need to be fighters too. We need to, you know, go on the warpath. The problem is they're running so far to the left, so far in a direction that just seems crazy to your average American, that Trump's going to be hard to beat. And this is an election where, frankly, I thought the Democrats would have a great shot, get somebody like a Connor Lamb or a Joe Biden, a good ticket that's of a moderate sort of, hey, guys, let's be reasonable and get this back on track.
Doesn't look like it now, though, does it?
They don't want to do that at all.
Hey, it looks like those voices aren't being heard. Hey, I want to talk about this angle that's taken by many on the left, that Kavanaugh was the president's choice because Brett Kavanaugh has talked in the past about protecting the executive branch from, you know, from any kind of prosecution here, right? That this was a plant by the president.
Yeah, no. I'll just say no, because that's not a theory that's just come up since Trump is president. That's been a longstanding practice because of the fact that you don't want a situation where you have federal prosecutors as having a sword over the head of the president. It's not something that you want, regardless who the president is. I mean, imagine Ronald Reagan. Let's say everybody loved Ronald Reagan. A federal prosecutor has a bone to pick with the president and indicts him for something. You know, that can have radical political consequences, even if there's no charges that are ultimately filed, even if there's no actual prosecution. The check on the executive branch is Congress. Congress can vote to impeach for high crimes and misdemeanors, and then you can prosecute. There are ways to do this, but this notion of Kavanaugh as a plant because he's acting consistently with longstanding precedent, that's just bizarre.
What, and back to something, the first thing you said in the first segment, the other big talking point from the left is this is the undoing of Roe versus Wade. That this is going to be, this is the judicial straw that changes Roe.
Sweet. This is a point on which I'm going to disagree with a lot of progressives. I mean, they want abortion on demand, no restrictions. And I do think this is going to change that balance. I absolutely
do. How does that come up? I mean, we just have about 90 seconds, but through your mind as an attorney, how does that look? What case comes up? How does it get to the Supreme Court?
Well, there are a number of different cases that can be filed, but ultimately it's something like, you know, somebody challenges a law in a state like Massachusetts on later term abortions or something like that. The case winds its way up to the Supreme Court, and then Supreme Court says, hey, well, the limitation on the right to privacy is the right to life, and we find that, for example,
post-viability fetuses are deserving of the Constitution's protections. That would really change the landscape. It wouldn't repeal all of Roe v. Wade, right, or all of Planned Parenthood v. Casey, but it would definitely change the landscape. I think that that's a reality that we're looking at here. And, you know, frankly, if Ginsburg dies within Trump's term, you could end up in a situation where Planned Parenthood v. Casey and, you know, consequently Roe v. Wade would be repealed outright.
There we go. Cameron Smith, R Street Institute, AL.com. And if they want to engage in further Kavanaugh discussion with you, where do they go? Twitter, you think?
Well, first of all, you should go outside and get some sunshine. And then tweet at me at D. Cameron Smith.
All right. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Coming right back, David Northcutt running for state senate. We're just a week out from the runoff in the primary. We'll find out why he wants to be your state senator. Coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:37, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Tuesday, 1 week out from primary runoff Tuesday in the state of Alabama. Reminding y'all, right, July 17th, time to head back to the polls. And joining us to talk more about that, David Northcutt. Also a reminder, too, got a note from my friends at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. This weekend, Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. And, of course, a week from Friday kicks off the, how about this, 85th annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and over $500,000 in prizes and cash. Also, that Crane Works Red Snapper Jackpot, brand new into the mix. That all gets kicked off the Liars Contest a week from Thursday night, and then, of course, 3 days of fishing. But we get the kids out fishing this weekend with the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. All right, great to welcome back into the studio David Northcutt, running for state senate. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Sean, for having me back. Such a pleasure.
Well, it's a lot to talk about here since last time we talked, as the stakes are ramped up here in the runoff. Of course, folks who listen to FM Talk 106.5 have heard your ads, also heard your opponent's ads. And I want to start off with that. We'll start off with this because I look at a text line here full of questions from people.
Absolutely.
They said, okay, Mr. Northcutt's in there, so let's address these.
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, that's good. So run down these what the ads are saying, that you're guilty of prescribing medicine or narcotics without a license or something like that. What is this all from?
Well, absolutely, and thank you for the opportunity. First of all, let me tell you that's ludicrous, but let's give you the background story on this first, okay?
Okay.
You need to realize that I'm running because I think the state of Alabama can win. We're in the 49th place, our schools are in 49th place, and I've made it clear that I'm going to Montgomery to do reform, to do grassroots reform, and it's a grassroots campaign.
Okay.
So you need to realize that Montgomery has heard about that, and those special interests have poured $350,000 into my opponent.
Now,
and
it's not just
Republican money either. It's Democratic money. You've got the AEA has poured about $40,000 or $50,000 in this race, and our GOP chairwoman Terry Lathan said Republicans are absolutely not supposed to take that money because the AEA, Alabama Education Association, is an extension of the Democratic Party. It's in our bylaws. This is not just theory, and so you've got all these special interests are coming and pouring this money in this race, and they are playing dirty and going underhanded. And so I really appreciate you giving me an opportunity to address these issues.
Well, okay, then that's good. I because this is a chance. I mean, people get these questions.
Absolutely.
Riding down the road, hear an ad and go,
absolutely,
oh wow, what is this all about? And I'm looking through this from back in 2008. This came up
with, absolutely. We're talking about the claim that I'm a drug dealer.
I appreciate
the opportunity to address that.
Prescribing, administering, and dispensing.
In 2008, well, first of all, the ad claims that I was caught by the dental board and that I was caught dispensing illegal drugs or something like that.
That's
absolutely nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay.
I have a DEA license, like you've got a driver's license that allows you to drive. I've got a DEA license, and I realized that I had allowed it to expire.
Okay, so you had it.
I had the license. It was paid. I forgot to renew it. It was an administrative violation.
Okay.
Nobody caught me in doing this. I realized it myself. I called the board and I reported it to the board. And
I self-reported
to the board. And what I did not know was this board was run by an attorney. You're supposed to have an executive director. And that runs the board, then you're supposed to have a firewall, and then you're supposed to have a prosecuting attorney. There was no executive director. There was no firewall. And this prosecuting attorney, who had run it for 35 years, personally profited off of more of prosecuting dentist and hygienist. The money went straight into his pocket. It was a direct conflict of interest.
So this board, what board is this?
This is the Board of Dental Examiners.
So this is
for the state of Alabama.
They meet somewhere in Montgomery.
It's supposed to meet in Montgomery. This board actually meets in Birmingham because that's where the dental school is.
Okay, so
that fine cost me $2,500 by the time it was said and done, counting all legal fees and stuff. And then I had to sign a consent order. I got a black mark on my national report card, all because we're not talking patient care. We're not talking anything other than an expired license. Of course, now back to my opponent. He's painting me out to be a drug dealer because I ended up having an expired license. And though I think that gives you a window into his character and the character of his campaign manager, John Gray, as well.
And looking at this, so once again, if I help it in Sullivanese, you have a DEA license. You
That's
can prescribe,
correct.
Like a dentist. Yeah, if, I don't want you looking here, but I mean, if I have some big drilling going on and y'all prescribe something there, that I then take that prescription, go pick up or
That's
whatever,
correct.
that you had the license, you didn't renew the license at some point, forgot to renew, and then they said, and then you self-reported, and they said, oh, you were breaking the law at that point.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And they said that you need to renew it. Now, what you need to realize now...
And you renewed it.
I renewed it.
Okay.
But you need to also realize that and the advertising violation that you're going to ask me about in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Those were so unjust and so out of whack. And I went to Birmingham and complained in front of several hundred dentists. And they came to me and said, my gosh, you're not afraid of these people. You need to run for the board. And
wait, so you're saying this right here is the impetus for why you're sitting here today?
Yes, I ran and got on the board of dental examiners. We got rid of that attorney that was on the take. He'd been there for 35 years. We got rid of him. We now have an executive director. We now have a firewall, and we have a much more fair system in place. We got rid of the good old boy system up there. And if this happens today... This same allowing your DEA license to expire, it's an administrative fine. You pay $500. You don't sign a consent order. It doesn't go on your national report card because you haven't mistreated a patient. This is just a paperwork error.
Yeah. So on this advertising side, so what is this all about? You know, I mean, when we hear advertising, get my attention here at FM Talk. I mean, what are they saying here? What did they accuse you of doing?
Basically being a drug dealer, I'm over-prescribing drugs and giving drugs to people that didn't need to get drugs. And there, the implication is that I'm a pill mill. That's what the implication is, and it's totally disingenuous. The second violation that he mentions is that this attorney I told you, I just paid the first fine, nothing happened. The
right.
second one is I left off. Now, get this. The accusation is that I'm a fraudster and do false and fraudulent advertising.
Right.
Okay, that's the accusation.
Right.
Okay, listen to what actually happened. This was the equivalent of a speed trap for professionals for this attorney to profit for now.
Okay, same guy. 35 years.
That's
here,
correct. Yeah. I left off the word results may vary from underneath a patient testimonial.
Okay.
And I used the phrase,
results may vary.
Results may vary under a patient testimonial. And I put in there, I used the term state of the art because our office is state of the art. And at that time, that was another speed trap. You were not allowed to say that back then. And those two things ended up costing me $10,000. That illegal fees and the fine, and that's what caused me to run for the board and go up there and to clean up the swamp. It was basically the swamp, and we were successful. We got him, but now those advertising fines, all those things have been reduced to advertising cannot be false or fraudulent. And that's another big advancement for the Board of Dental Examiners.
So results may vary.
Results may vary.
And state of the art.
And state of the art. And my opponent now is saying that I have put out false advertising, which is not true, because I just left off a disclaimer. And we are state of the art. And he's saying I'm being fraudulent, which I think, again, shows you a lot about his character.
Just joining us, talking to David Northcutt, running for state senate, and your chance to get more information, too. Your website is Northcutt for Senate?
That is correct. NorthcuttForSenate.com.
And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about that, because you line out your issues here. I'm sure there's something that's going to hit home with everybody here. We'll talk about the coast getting its fair share. Although, let me say, it sounds like it's popular. What we've been talking about down here about the coast getting the fair share,
sure.
I'm hearing political ads around the state now that all, where were they when we needed them to be on our side?
They people were on the take. That's where they were.
We'll talk about that. We give back also taxes and roads and all those issues that are everyday kitchen table issues for folks in Mobile and Baldwin County. Of course, this on the Baldwin County side. When we return to our conversation with David Northcutt, running for state senate, right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And I guess I got to say it now. Results may vary. And this may or may not be a state-of-the-art broadcast facility. I don't know. You come check. All right, 1247. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1251, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, Tuesday style, week out from the runoffs in the primary. And guest in studio, David Northcutt. Glad you're here. We're kind of running down some of the allegations that have been made. You went through a couple in the last break, but I'm looking at the text line, and y'all are welcome to drop your questions into 343-0106. And this texter says to ask you why the Dental Association is backing Chris Elliott.
Great question, and appreciate the opportunity, but it's not just the Dental Association. It's just about every association out of Montgomery Swamp. They're dropping the money there, but you would think, as me being a dentist, that I would have gotten that.
Right, you would have the dentist vote.
There is an explanation of that.
Okay.
I told you about going after the attorney that had been in charge of the board for 35 years, and we were successful in getting him and getting him replaced. What I did not tell you is that his best friend was a lobbyist who ran the Dental Association. And as I was a sitting board member, the lobbyist started attacking me and my efforts in going after the attorney. Now, this board was so messed up at the time, it's a governmental agency that would not even release the minutes to the board, okay? And so what I did is I formed up my own website called Northcutt News. And then we also started sending out emails saying what was happening behind the scenes. I wasn't making stuff up. I'm just shining a bright light on this governmental agency and how dysfunctional it is. Well, this gentleman from the Alabama Dental Association, the lobbyist, starts attacking me with the official Alabama Dental Association website, and he also attacks me with their email pool. There's about 2,400 dentists in the state, licensed dentists. They had about 1,200 email addresses at the time, and they're sending out emails saying how I'm disparaging the attorney. So what do? I hire two temporary employees and put them upstairs at my dental office. We call all 2,400 dentists in the state, and when it's through, we have 1,700 email addresses. And I start blasting out the truth, and that's what helped us get the attorney in the first place. Well, after we got the attorney, then we turned our attention, and I had some great help. So I don't think this was all me, Sean. I had a great network of dentists behind me. They're also still behind me. They're helping fund this campaign and sending in tens of thousands of dollars to help me fight this Montgomery machine that's coming after me. But we went after the executive director for the Alabama Dental Association, and I demanded a forensic audit of the Alabama Dental Association on my Northcutt News website and through those email addresses, and they had no choice but to comply once we did that. Once the audit came back, it was revealed that assets and properties were missing and that he was running the entire dental association through his personal credit card. I can't make this up. And so they ended up firing that guy who had been over the dental association for 35 years. Now, we got the head attorney for the board and cleaned up the attorney and got an executive director, and we got rid of that corrupt executive director from the Alabama Dental Association. But that group of dentists that have had their back scratched for decades, most of them are in their 70s and 80s, are still there. They're still control the checkbook, and they're still making the decisions, and they are scared to death, just like Montgomery's scared to death, that I'm going to win this seat, because it's threatening their power base. The state of Alabama is in 49th position, but the special interests in the state of Alabama are winning, and they're winning at the citizens' expense, and that's why I'm in this race, certainly not for the money. I'm in this race to go to Montgomery, make a difference, and Montgomery knows it, and they're coming after me.
Yeah, I see here, cleaning up Montgomery, one of the planks of your platform. Also, now we're talking about my kind of stuff, fiscal responsibility and reform budgeting. How do you change that in Montgomery?
Well, that's really a really big topic, because it involves two different things. You've got the Constitution, which is outdated and needs to be addressed, but you've also got legislation on the other side that is affecting how our money's budgeted.
Yeah, what about earmarking?
Do you realize, that was my next statement, do you realize 93 cents out of every dollar in the state of Alabama is earmarked?
This audience does. We talk about it all the time, David, but I've been crying the blues about it for 10 years and nothing's changed.
And it hasn't changed because you've got the BCA and you've got the AEA and you've got all these special interests that are winning, and they're paying off politicians, and they're also handpicking politicians, and like my opponent, and they're throwing $350,000 into this race trying to protect this little bubble they have where they've got these earmarks that are tied down. There's a lobbyist behind every pile of money there trying to protect it, and it's going to take somebody with vision, and it's going to take somebody with determination, and not to go into Montgomery like I went into that dental board without fear and basically have a bare knuckle affair. And that's what
you'd have to build. You have to build a coalition, but it seems like everything I've read, at least there will be a 33% change up on Goat Hill.
Absolutely.
33% new faces up there.
Absolutely. But I'm telling you, it also takes leadership. And it takes conservative leadership. And I've been very fortunate in my business. How many dentists do you know that own six offices, employ 16 dentists, and 120 employees? That happens because you think outside the box and you say, okay, I know these are the restrictions from the insurance industry. How can we work around that? And so it's that type of thinking that's going to go in there and take on these special interests and turn this thing around. If we don't, if we just keep sending people up there that are rubber stamp people like my opponent Chris Elliott, you're going to end up in 49th position and you're going to end up with 95 cents out of every dollar locked down in your with your earmarks.
David Northcutt, thank you for stopping in. Thanks for being part of the show.
Oh, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for giving me a format to combat these frivolous and charges.
All right, if people want to go online, NorthcuttForSenate.com.
Yes.
And on social media, on Facebook?
Absolutely on Facebook. Got a great post today about the quote from Terry Latham that says that real Republicans don't take Democratic money because it's AEA money, because it's an extension of the Democratic Party. And so I've got a great quote on there about that, and I say that it's David Northcutt, the grassroots Republican, take on Democratic Chris Elliott in the race. So go there and read that. I certainly would appreciate it.
All right. Coming right back. Thank you for your time. Coming right back next hour, your chance to ask the sheriff. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us. Okay, the first question I'm going to ask him is something that took a lot of deputies' time today. It started off as an RV wired with explosives, turned out to be a camper with fireworks in it. We'll have to get some clarification from the sheriff coming up. Y'all stay close. News is next.